Okay, we are learning Perek Yud Zayin of Sefer Shmuel, and the beginning of a famous story. We're not going to have time to get to the whole story tonight, but it's the beginning of a famous story. And the Perek begins, Perek Yud Zayin Pasuk Aleph, Vayasfu Plishtim Es Machanehem La Milchama. Now again, keep in mind, just to recap, at the very end of Perek Tes Zion, so we know that David was anointed as the incoming Melech. He's not the Melech just yet. Shaul is still the Melech. But he was anointed as the incoming Melech. And at the very end of the Perek, we saw that Shaul was in a state of despair. And he was in a deep depression. And his advisors suggested that he get somebody to play, an expert musician, to play some music for him on the harp, and that will lift his spirits. And they found David. And we have this, of course, there's no coincidences in life, but we have this turn of events where David, who's going to be the next king and was just anointed as the future king, is now helping Shaul, right, in the Shaul's right-hand man, so to speak. So now, the Plishtim, all of a sudden, gather their troops. Vayasfu Plishtim es machaneim la milchama. They gather their troops to do battle against Bnei Yisrael. Vayasfu Socho, Asher LeYehuda. And they gather in this place called Socho, which was in the Chelek of Shevet Yehuda. Vayachanu bein Socho uvein Azeka be'efes damim. And they camped between Socho and Azaka in this place called Efes Damim.
Isn't that contradictory? And it says they gather in Socho, and they camp between Socho and Azaka.
Yeah. So the Malbim explains. Well, we'll get to that. We'll get to it in a second. But essentially, let's start with that. So the Malbim says that, first of all, how does this perek flow from the previous perek? We assume there's some kind of connection between the end of one perek and the beginning of the next perek. So what's the connection here? So the Malbim says very simply that once Shaul, who was the Melech Yisrael, lost his Ruach Hashem, right? And remember, we said that Shaul lost his Ruach Hashem. That's what caused this despair. So once Shaul lost his Ruach Hashem, so now the Plishtim were invigorated, right? And this was not something that they knew. They didn't know that Shaul lost his Ruach Hashem, but just in the spiritual realms, this is what happened. Once Shaul lost the Ruach Hashem, he no longer had Hashem's presence with him in the same way. So now all of a sudden, the Plishtim have more koach. The Plishtim are reinvigorated and rejuvenated and ready to do battle. And to contrast, that we know at the beginning of this fight between the Plishtim and Bnei Yisrael, Yonasan alone was able to defeat the whole Plishti camp. So the tides are beginning to turn here. That in the beginning, Yonasan was able to do it, single-handedly to defeat the whole camp. And now we have all of a sudden the Plishtim becoming, rejuvenated, reinvigorated, and ready to fight. So they camp in Socho, which was in Yehuda. And the Malbim says that, even in the land of Yehuda, they weren't scared. The Plishtim were very brazen. Okay, almost like they already own the place. Literally walking into Shevet Yehuda. They lost before, but now they're ready for battle. That's right. And then the Malbim says to answer Joe's question, that why does the Pasuk say, and then it says that the Plishtim camped in Socho, which was in Yehuda, but then they saw that Bnei Yisrael was still very far away. We'll talk about that in a second. So they advanced. This was the second advance. They advanced a little bit further, and they camped again. This was the second camping between Socho and Azeka, in a place called Efes Damim. Now, most of the Mefarshim understand Efes Damim was the name of a place. The Radak quotes a Medrash that says that why was it called Efes Damim? So one opinion of the Medrash says that the ground there was red. It looked like almost like blood soaked. Now that's how red the ground was in this location. That's one opinion. And the other opinion says that this is where the blood of the Jews stopped, because this is going to be the location of David's final battle with the Plishtim. In this place, Ephes Damim, David. We're going to see. Stay tuned. Right. So this is going to be the place of David's final battle with the Plishtim, and that's why it's called Ephes Damim, that this was the end of the blood, right? The end of Bnei Yisrael's bloodshed. Exactly. Okay. That's what we're getting to. No. We all know the punchline. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So Pasuk Beis, V'shol v'ish Yisrael ne'esfu, v'yachanu be'emek ha'ela. So Shaul and Bnei Yisrael, his army, they gathered and they camped in the valley of Elah, Vayarchu Milchama Likras Plishtim. And they got ready to do battle. Right? Now the Malbim says that Bnei Yisrael were scared out of their wits. Okay, they were scared out of their wits. And they could have gone to Socho. Keep in mind, Socho was in Shevet Yehuda. They could have gone to Socho to drive out the Plishtim. They didn't do that. They were too nervous. They were too scared. Okay? And that's when they first gathered. They didn't even want to get close to them, right? They didn't want to get close to the Plishtim. So that's why they camped in Emek Ha'elah. They knew they had to camp. They had to get ready for battle, so they camped here. But it wasn't that close to the Plishtim. And in fact, says the Malbim, that's why the Plishtim had to advance again to get closer to Bnei Yisrael, because the Plishtim camped, and they expected Bnei Yisrael would come out to them, you know, and then they would do battle. But Bnei Yisrael, they came out a little bit, and then they camped. So pushed him, you know, thinking to themselves, what's going on here? I don't know exactly. I don't know. But why are they so far? So the Plishtim advanced a little bit more. I'm not sure. I'm not sure that he needs Shmuel. Meaning if you see the Plishtim are attacking you, you know. Well, I mean, they're not setting up camp to play ping pong, you know. I mean, right? Yeah, I hear you. I don't know. But I think where if it's a defensive war, I'm not sure that you need a Navi. Because you need a Navi to go on the offensive. Right? If you're going to attack, so maybe you need to consult a Navi or the Urim V'Tumim to see, is this going to be the right thing or not? But if it's a defensive, where you see the enemy is setting up camp to attack you, you got to get ready for battle. You know, I don't think you have to consult a Navi for that. I don't think. Okay, Pasuk Gimel, Uplishtim Omdim El Hahar Mizeh, the Yisrael Omdim El Hahar Mizeh, V'Hagai Beneihem. So you have the Plishtim on one mountain. You have the Bnei Yisrael on the other mountain, and all that's between them is this valley, right? That's what's between the Plishtim and the Bnei Yisrael. Pasuk Dalet. By the way, just the Radak points out that even though in Pasuk Beis we said that Bnei Yisrael already camped. They camped in Emek Ha'elah, right? So what are we saying here that the Yisrael were on a har? We just said they were in an Emek. Emek is a valley. Har is a mountain. So where were Bnei Yisrael? Pasuk Beis implies that they camped in Emek Ha'elah, right? Whereas Pasuk Gimel implies they were on a mountain. So which one is it? So the Radak says that the bulk of the Jewish camp of the Bnei Yisrael was in the valley, Emek Ha'elah. But the fighters, like the real fighters who were going to, I guess, do the first wave of battle, they ascended up to the mountain to be right across from the Plishtim. That's how he understands. Pasuk Dalet. Vayetze ish habeinayim mimachanos Plishtim. So a man who was the ish habeinayim. Okay, now what's ish habeinayim? Ish habeinayim, most of the Mefarshim understand, he was a person that was comfortable standing in between the two camps. He wasn't scared. It's a champion. Champion, okay.
These are people who put it on safari.
Yeah. But right. Yeah, but the Mefarshim understand Isha Beinayim, because Beinayim is Bein, right? Between two things. So this fellow, this guy, this warrior, this Plishti warrior, so he went and he would stand in between the two camps. Now, normally you have two opposing camps. One soldier by himself is going to be too scared to go out in the middle of the field in between the two camps. He's going to get shot. He's going to get, you know, killed. This guy wasn't scared. Gol Yashimo, This was Goliath. This is what we know, right? Goliath, Goliath in English. Migas, he was from the place called Gas. Govho Shesh Amos Vazares. He was very tall. 6 amos tall. He was very tall, and plus a Zeres. He was a very, very tall person. Almost like a giant, right? Shesh Amos. I mean, an Amo is a, you know, even if an Amo is a foot and a half, you know, I mean, you're talking a 9-foot person. I mean, he was a gigantic, right? I'm sorry? A giant among men, exactly. A giant among men. Okay. So the Malbim says that he was a very powerful person, right? He was a strong person. He was a powerful person. Number one, just because of his size, and he was so much bigger than everybody else. So just because of his size, he was, he was gigantic and powerful and scary. Okay, Pasuk Hey. The Kovan the Choshes al Rosho, and not only says the Malbim was he scary and powerful because of his size, but also because of his armor and the clothing that he wore. He had this copper hat on his head, the Shiryon, Kaskasim hu Lavush, and he had a body armor that was made of like little chain link body armor all over his body. Umishgal Hashiryon Chamesha Salafim Shkolim Nechoshes. And it was very heavy, right? This Shiryon, this body armor that he wore was extremely heavy. And says the Malbim, that means that he was very, very strong. So number one, he was gigantic. He was very tall. Not only was he tall, but he was very strong. He also was very well protected. Right? All over his body, he had this armor that was protecting him. Continues the Pasuk in Pasuk Vav. Umitzchas nechoshes al raglov. He had also some sort of a copper shield on his legs. Bechido nechoshes ben seifav. And he had some other sort of protective piece of copper also between his shoulders. So the Mefarshim discuss what exactly all these things were. You know, a kidon seems to be some sort of a copper piece that came down from his hat and went between his shoulders to protect his neck, according to Rashi. The Radak suggests maybe it's some sort of a weapon. It's not clear exactly what all these things are. Different opinions in the Mefarshim, how to understand them. Yeah, so that's one opinion in the Mefarshim. The Radak learns like that it's some sort of a weapon. But Rashi seems to learn that it's some sort of a protective, you know, protective gear, whatever it is. But he was very, very well protected. Pasuk Zayin, and says the Malbim, not only was he a giant, and not only was he very strong, and not only was he well protected, but also he had weapons. He had weapons. The eitz chaniso. Kimenor Orgim, the handle, the wood handle of his spear was as thick as a weaver's beam. It was a very thick thing. You know, most people could not even hold such a big weapon. Vilaheves chaniso sheish me'os shkalim barzel, and the sharp tip of his spear was, you know, weighed 600 iron shkolim. So that's how heavy it was. V'nosei hatzina holeich lefanav. Not only that, but even had someone going in front of him, who was carrying the shield to protect him. So this was a person that was very, very scary. Pasuk Ches. Vayamod vayikra el ma'archos Yisrael vayomer lohem. So he calls out to the Jewish camp, and he tells them, "Lama seitzu laroch milchama? Why are you going out to do battle? Halo anochi aplishti. I am the plishti." And we'll have to explain what exactly this means. What do you mean, "I am the plishti"? He is a plishti. What do you mean, "I am the plishti"? I am the plishti. Ve'atem avodim l'shaul, and you guys are servants to Shaul. Beru lachem ish. v'yered alai. Choose a person and let him come down to me to fight me. Okay, I'm gonna read the next two psukim, and then we'll explain. Pasuk tes im yuchal lehilachem iti v'ikani. If the soldier that you choose will be able to fight with me and defeat me, v'hayinu lachem la'avadim, will be slaves. Will be your slaves. V'imani uchal lo v'hikisiv. But if I'm victorious and I defeat him, v'yisem lanu la'avadim b'avadatem osanu. You'll be slaves to us, to the Plishtim. Vayomer haplishti, and the Plishti says, Pasuk Yud, Ani cheirafti es marchos Yisrael hayom hazeh. I've mocked. Well, cheirafti is like to mock. I've mocked, taunted the camp of Yisrael today. Tenu li ish v'nilacham ayachad. Right? You know, bring me a person. Let's fight. Okay. And obviously, the response here is fear. Pasuk Yud Aleph, Vayishma Shol v'chol Yisrael es divrei haplishti ha'ele, Vayichatu vayiru me'od. Right, Shaul, the king, and the rest of the people are very, very scared. So what's happening?
Rabbi?
Yes. Yes, Marvin.
Where was Goliath the first time when Yohanan's son, you know, knocked all of them off, you know.
Right.
You know, before.
Good question. I don't know. I'm not sure. Maybe he was training. You know, maybe he was just growing up. You know, I'm not really sure. I also don't know exactly how long ago that was.
Well, the prophet says
Gass.
He's from
Gass.
And also now he says he's from Plishti.
No, well, Gass was a Plishti city.
Oh, what?
Yeah. Yeah, Gass was a Plishti city. Okay, I think we learned about Gass when we talked about the Aron being captured. That was one of the cities, I think, that the Aron was in, if I'm not mistaken. Okay, so Anochi Aplishti, you know, it's interesting. So Rashi says, what was the taunt of Goliath here? So Rashi says he was taunting them and saying, you know, why are you all coming out to fight? You don't all need to come and fight. Just send one person. Send one person to fight me. We'll settle it. Exactly. Yeah. So we'll see something very interesting in a moment. And Anochi Aplishti, when he says Anochi Aplishti, so some of the Mefarshim understand that he was saying that I'm just a regular Plishti. I'm just one of the Plishtim. I'm just a regular Plishti. But I've already killed, and here, and this actually touches a little bit on Marvin's question, but he says, I've already killed Chafni and Pinchas. So according to Rashi, this is not his first parade. You know, he was around earlier, and he killed Chafni and Pinchas, and he says also, I captured the Aron. He was the one originally. Chafni and Pinchas, remember, were Eli's two sons. They were killed by the Plishtim. So according to what Rashi says here in Pasuk Ches, Goliath was the one to kill them. And it sounds like Goliath was the one who first captured the Aron from Bnei Yisrael. The Metzudas David also says that Anochi HaPlishtim means I'm the best of the Plishtim. I'm the best of the Plishtim. So it's not befitting for me to fight anyone who's not the best. So send me your best soldier. I don't want to fight these little puny soldiers here. Right? Send me the best of what you got. What's this whole business with the slaves? Right? So he says that if you're victorious, then we'll be your slaves. If I'm victorious, then you'll be our slaves. So the interesting thing that Tzudas Dov, and the Malbim also points this out, is that he says, you know, and this is really a good deal. It's a good deal for you. Why? Because you're already slaves to Shaul. You're already slaves to Shaul. So if I win, instead of being slaves to Shaul, you'll be my slaves. You'll be our slaves, the Plishtim slaves. We have the raw end of the deal here. Because we're right now a free people. We're a free nation. We're nobody's slaves. And if you win, we'll become slaves. So he was even like taunting them, mocking them, that like, you know, you guys got a good deal here. You know, come and fight. You have a good deal. So it's very interesting that the Malbim here has a long piece, and he quotes the Abarbanel. He quotes the Abarbanel, and the Abarbanel says that the way it used to work in the battle in those days, and he says that this, you know, he says the Abarbanel says it still applies in some of the Arab lands and even some of the Christian lands, that whenever you had like a dispute, so what they would do is they would have like a duel. You know, two people would fight each other. And the idea was that when the two people would fight each other, whoever would win, you know, that's like the God-sent message that this person was correct. So they argue about something. There's no way to resolve it. So how do we resolve it? Let's fight it out. And whoever wins, that's God's message. That's God's way of saying that that this person was correct. So the Abarbanel quotes some opinions who believe that this is what Goliath was trying to do. Right? Goliath was trying to have this like one-on-one battle, this duel, which apparently was common in those days, and this would settle the score. Right? This would settle the score. Now, the Abarbanel himself... Okay, good. So the Abarbanel himself...
He wanted
Charles to fight him? No, he wanted anybody. He didn't know who it was going to be.
Who? Oh,
yeah. Yeah, correct. Yeah, but okay. So the Abarbanel rejects this because he says that those duels, like these battles, you know, the duels between the two individuals, required four things that we don't find here in this fight. Number one, he says there has to be some sort of dispute. He says, what was the dispute here? There was no dispute, right? The Plishtim were camping to fight against Bnei Yisrael, and Bnei Yisrael wanted to defend themselves. There's no dispute. What are they disputing? That's question number one. Question number two, he says that the way this was done, this was like an official duel, and they drew up rules. And they had Aiden, and they wrote down the rules, you know, in a document, and the witnesses would sign the rules. You know, this wasn't like just a street fight. You know, this was like a real, you know, methodical battle. And he says you don't find that here. You don't find them agreeing to the rules of the battle. You know, you certainly don't find them recording anything or having any type of witnesses. Number three, the Abarbanel writes that they made sure when these two people dueled that they had exactly the same weapons. Why? Because they wanted it to be a fair fight. Again, keep in mind, the idea here was that this was a sign that the victor would be a sign from God that this person was supposed to be victorious. It's only a sign from God if it's a fair fight. So they would level the terrain. They would make sure that everyone has the same exact weapons. And not only that, but they would appoint shoftim v'shotrim. There would be like a referee, you know, who would referee the match and who would make sure that everybody's got the same weapons, that it's a fair fight. The only difference was the natural strength of each warrior. And then whoever would win, it would be clear that that he was the victor. So it says the Abarbanel, we don't find any of that stuff here. So I don't know what they're talking about. Comes the Malbim and says, I agree with that first approach. And the Malbim learns that here, this was one of these duels. It was a duel. Now, what was the dispute? Right? You need some sort of a dispute. So what was the dispute? So he says there was a dispute. Why? Because originally, keep in mind, the Plishtim had conquered certain parts of Eretz Yisrael. They had already enslaved and oppressed the Jewish people. And then what happened? Bnei Yisrael fought back. And they fought the Plishtim off. I remember back to the times of Shimshon already, where we're already grappling with the Plishtim. So this is an ongoing battle. So says the Malbim, that was the dispute. The Plishtim wanted once again to enslave Bnei Yisrael. They wanted to be in charge. They wanted Bnei Yisrael to be their slaves. That's what they wanted. Bnei Yisrael obviously didn't want that. So says Goliath, in order to settle this dispute once and for all, let's duel. I'm on the Plishti side. Who do you have that's going to fight me on the Jewish side, on the Bnei Yisrael side? And that's what he says, right? That's why Pasuk Tes says that if I'm victorious, you'll be our slaves. And if you're victorious, we'll be your slaves, right? These were the terms of the battle that Goliath was suggesting to draw up. Now, says the Malbim, if Bnei Yisrael had agreed to these terms, then they Taka would have drawn up a document. They would have drawn up the rules for the fight. They would have had Edim sign it. They would have appointed referees to referee the battle. They would have made sure that everyone had, you know, the same weapons. They would have made sure of all this. But Bnei Yisrael didn't want. Bnei Yisrael did not agree to do this. They decided we want to go nation to nation. We want to fight nation to nation. We don't want to fight individual, right? Maybe because they were scared, because they said, who's going to be able to beat this guy, even if we have the same weapons? You know, who has a chance to beat Goliath? There's no chance. What? Exactly. Right? So they decided not to go along with this plan. They rejected his plan. And they decided that they wanted to just fight. They wanted to just fight nation to nation. Now, once Goliath sees that Bnei Yisrael are not taking the bait, and they're not sending someone, they're not agreeing to this type of battle, so then in Pasuk Yud he comes along. Vayomer Aplishti, Ani Cherafti Es Marchos Yisrael Hayom Azeh. Tenu Li Yishvino Lachama Yachad. So what's he saying? He's saying that I'm mocking you, right? I'm mocking you because you're not powerful, you're not strong. Obviously, you don't want to send someone because nobody can beat me, right? So you guys are a bunch of weaklings. You're a bunch of weaklings. You're a bunch of amateur soldiers. No one's going to be able to beat me. And he begins, you know, mocking them and taunting them that they can't do it, that they're not strong, that they're not giborim. Now, so obviously we have, you know, Shaul, here's what's going on. And he's afraid. He's taka afraid. We don't have anybody who can fight this guy, right? And he's afraid. You know, how are we going to do this? Okay, so we all know the end of the story. We all know the end of the story, that David is the one who's going to eventually kill Goliath. That much we know. But let's introduce David into the story. And again, we're not going to have time to read about the whole fight tonight. We'll have to pick up next week. But let's at least introduce David into the story. So Pasuk Yud Beis, the David ben Ish Efrasi Hazem Beis Lechem Yehuda. So David was the son of an Ish Efrasi, right? A person from Efras. So Beis Lechem is in the area of Efrat. I mean, now Efrat is a separate town, you know, a separate city. I think now it's not a town anymore; it's a city. But in those days, it sounds like the whole area was called Efras. We find also in the Torah, right? B'derech Efrasa he Beis Lechem. You know, we find it there as well. Ushmo Yishai. So we're reintroduced now to Yishai. V'lo Shmo Nevanim. He has eight sons, as we know. V'ha'ish b'imei Shaul Zaken Baba Anashim. And he was already an old man, right? Yishai was an old man.
Do we have something with the eight sons?
Yes. So Rashi mentions it here also, that in Divrei Hayamim, it only mentions seven sons. Even though here it mentions eight, Divrei Hayamim only mentions seven. And we had one of the Mefarshim discussed it back then also. I think the Radak, had a whole arichos about it then. Yes, exactly, right. So Rashi says maybe one died without children, so he's not listening to Divrei Hayamim. Divrei Hayamim is all about the descendants, so he didn't leave any descendants.
but we already mentioned David before. Yes, exactly.
So the Radak says that's why we say the word Hazeh. But David ben Ish Efrasi Hazeh, meaning we're referring to him, we know David already. We're not being introduced to David. Now, we were already introduced to David. We're just referring back to David. We're referring back to David. And we're mentioning him again to explain how he came onto the scene here to fight with Goliath. Okay? Now, the Radak, you know, and the Mitzudas David here also explain that, you know, that this David wasn't here. David was not part of this battle. And number one, the Mitzudas David said it's a little, I'm sorry, the Malbim says it's a little strange. David was known as a Gibor Chayil. We know he's going to be known as a warrior, right? A kid who's got a warrior heart inside of him. If there's a battle going on with the Plishtim, where is he going to be? He's going to be in the battle. He's going to be with the soldiers. So where was David? Meaning it's clear here that David wasn't here. So where was he? So that's what this pasuk is coming to explain. Number one, where was David? And question number two that we have is that if David, as we learned at the end of last perek, was playing for Shaul. He was Shaul's musician. So why didn't David know what was going on? Okay, we're about to see David didn't know what was going on. Right. Exactly. Although we did. There was one shot. One of the Mefarshim said that it meant that David himself had a weapon bearer, not that he was Shaul's weapon bearer, but David himself had a weapon bearer. There was one. One of the Mefarshim said that. But I hear your question. Okay. So just again, this pasuk is saying that Yishai was a chashuv person. Baba Anoshim. Some say Baba Anoshim. The pshat is that he was very old. The trash of Baba Anoshim means that he used to walk around with an entourage because he was very chashuv. Yishai was an old person at this time, but he was already a chashuv person. He also wasn't in the battle now, right? He also wasn't in the battle. Who was in the battle? So says the pasuk in pasuk Yud Gimel. Vayelchu shloshes b'nei Yishai agedolim holchu acharei Shaul amilchama. Only the three older sons of Yishai went to battle with Shaul. B'shem shloshes banav asher holchu b'milchama Eliav habachor u'mishnehu Avinadav v'ashlishi Shama. So these were the three sons. And if you remember, these were also the three sons that we discussed where Shmuel had at least a thought that maybe these sons would be the king, right? Eliav was the first one, Avinadav was the second one, and the third one was Shama. We don't mention the other names, right? Exactly. These were the three oldest. These were presumably the three most chashuv. And it sounds like the Mefarshim say that they accompanied Shaul. They were like Shaul's right-hand men, right? You know, they were like the elite force here in Shaul's army. Now, the Malbim also explains that the part of what the Pesukim are saying here is that the system was not everybody can go to war, right? So imagine Yishai has eight sons, but Yishai also has a business at home. Who's running the business? He's an old man. He can't do everything himself. So he needs some of his kids to stay home and help him out, around the house and around the business. And then he'll send some kids to war. In fact, says the Malbim, that the majority of the sons had to stay back. Only three sons went to battle. Correct. Well, he was a shepherd. Maybe there were others, other aspects of the business. Somebody's making sweaters from the wool. Who knows? But anyway, the Malbim says that the majority of his sons stay back with him to help him out, in the home, to help him out in the business. Majority of the sons stayed home, and just these three sons were the ones who went to battle. They were the only ones who went to battle. David stayed back. Correct. Okay. So now's the question. What do you mean David stayed back? We learned that David was the menage.
Right.
Exactly. Okay. So let's continue reading. Pasuk Yudalid. V'David hu akatan u'shlosha hagedolim holchu acharei Shaul. So David was the youngest son. Okay. He was the katan, and the three older boys, they were the ones who followed Shaul. Okay? Now, the Mitzvah David says, because David was the youngest son, it made sense for him to stay back, right? But now, we're still faced with our question. How come David, wasn't with Shaul at the time? So comes Pasuk Tesvav and explains, that David, holech vashav me'al Shaul, liros es tzon aviv beis lachem. David was not always with Shaul. He was holech vashav. He would go back and forth. He would commute, right? He would stay with Shaul for a period of time until, I guess, Shaul didn't need him anymore. And then he would go back to his father's place and tend to the sheep. And then he would stay there for a little bit, and then he would go back to Shaul. He was holech vashav. He would go back and forth. So at this time, when the battle was taking place, David was home. He wasn't with Shaul. So he didn't know what was going on. He didn't know the Plishtim were camping. Had he known the Plishtim were camping, he may have run over there. But he didn't hear about it. Okay. Pasuk Tezayin. Yigash haplishti hashke v'hari v'yisyatzi v'arboim yom. So now the plishti Golias is getting, every day he comes out and he taunts and he mocks Bnei Yisrael. And he does it twice a day. In the morning and in the evening. Okay. He's doing it to mess with them, to disturb them. Rashi says, quotes a Chazal, that why is it Hashkem Beharev? Because he knew that the Jewish people, they daven, Mincha Maariv, they say Kriya Shema twice a day. So when they're saying Kriya Shema to be Mekabel Ol Malchus Shemayim, he knew what was going on. He came out and he started mocking them. He started taunting them while they were davening. So this way they wouldn't be able to focus. They wouldn't be able to accept to be Mekabel Ol Malchus Shemayim, specifically when they were saying Kriya Shema Hashkem Beharev. He came out 40 days. He was taunting and mocking them. Now, obviously, there's no coincidences. Why 40 days? Okay. So Pashup Shad is just 40 days. That's a Pashup Shad. But the Medrash, there are two Midrashim that the Radak quotes. One Medrash is that there was no way for Bnei Yisrael to defeat him until after 40 days. Why? Because what else is 40? 40 is also Kabbalah Satorah. Right? Moshe Rabbeinu was up on Har Sinai for 40 days and 40 nights. So, correct, right? So, because of that, they needed the Koach HaTorah. They needed the Koach HaTorah in order to defeat Goliath. And therefore, they had to wait 40 days, which corresponded to the 40 days of Kabbalah HaTorah. And then they would have this Chus of the Torah to help them defeat Goliath. That's one Medrash. Another very interesting Medrash is that the 40 days were not for Bnei Yisrael, but the 40 days were actually a reward for Goliath's mom. Who was Goliath's mother? So the Gemara says that Goliath's mother was Orpah. Orpah, who was the daughter-in-law of Naomi, right? Ruth's sister-in-law. So she was Goliath's mother, according to the Gemara. So Chazal say that Orpah took 40 steps to accompany her mother-in-law Naomi. And finally, Naomi said, go back, don't come with me, go back. And Orpah left. Okay, and she turned her neck. That's what the Gemara says. Actually, she was called Orpah because she turned her neck, Oref, back of her neck. She turned her neck on Naomi. But she took 40 steps with her before she turned her back. So in the zchus of those 40 steps, right, as a reward for those 40 steps that Orpah took to accompany Naomi, her son, Goliath, had the ability to mock and taunt Bnei Yisrael for 40 days, which is an incredible thing, right? Because here you have, she didn't even end up going with her, but she just tried. She took 40 steps. For each one of those steps, she was rewarded, according to this Chazal. How was she rewarded? Goliath. And the reward is even at the expense of Bnei Yisrael. It's an amazing thing. You see also the extent of a chesed, right? You're trying to do the chesed, she's trying to go with her, and even though it doesn't pan out, and you're not successful because she ended up turning back, but you're rewarded for it. And even at the expense of Bnei Yisrael, she was rewarded. Correct. David HaMelech. This is also says the Gemara. This is a meeting, right? Because David HaMelech descended from Rus. Exactly. And Goliath descended from Orpah, and you have now the meeting of these two individuals. Exactly. Okay. Okay. So now, after the 40 days, Vayomer Yishai leDavid beno. So Yishai says to David his son, Kach no leAchecha Eifas haKoli hazeh. Take for your brothers an ephah, a certain measurement of this, toasted, roasted grain. Va'asara lechem azen, these 10 rolls, these 10 loaves of bread. V'haretz hamachane le'achecha. And go and run them over to your brothers in the camp. Run them over to your brothers in the camp. Okay? Now, the Mefarshim point out here, the Malbim says that, what's going on now with this food? So the Mefarshim say the battle was schlepping on. This was like 40 days that it was schlepping on. Nothing was happening. They ran out of food. They mamash ran out of food. So Yishai is now sending more food with David to go replenish the stock of his sons. Pasuk Yurches. Yes, Aseres Haritze Hechalav Ha'ele Tavi Lasar Ha'alef. You should also bring these 10 cheeses. Haritzei Achalav, the Mefarshim say, are cheeses. Bring them to the Sar HaElef. That was the officer that was appointed over 1,000 soldiers I guess he was in charge. He was appointed over the three sons. So bring him a little matana, bring him a present. And your brothers, you should remember them in peace. You know, find out how they're doing. Bring a report back exactly as to how they're doing. Now the Mefarshim interestingly say, what's this es aruba sam tikach? So Pashup Shat is that see how they're doing. Bring back a report as to exactly how they're doing. But Rashi brings a medrash, and the Radak also quotes it, that aruba sam tikach, aruba sam, means you should take a get from them for their wives. Why should you take a get? So this is something that exactly. It's something that the Gemara discusses also, that a lot of times when the Jewish soldiers would go to war, they would give their wives a get before they left, on condition that if they don't come back, then she should be divorced. Why? Because they wanted to avoid aguna problems. Because if you get lost in battle, but they don't know for sure where you killed, where you're not killed, you didn't return, so then the wife is an aguna. We want to avoid that. So they used to give some sort of a get. So some say that that's what he wanted to get from the boys. Once he saw there was a battle coming, he said, go, have them write up a get for their wives and bring it back. You'll be the shaliach to bring back the get. Some say also, the Radak says there were a mashko, different mashkonos, collateral that they would give because they ran out of money. They needed food, so they would give collateral to purchase some food. So their father was sending money to redeem their collateral. So some say that's what aruba sam tikach means, that he was redeeming the collateral that they had given. Okay. And last pasuk we'll do for tonight, your test. And now Shaul and Vehema, Mefarshim say Vehema means the three sons, the Cholish Yisrael and the rest of the Jewish army, Ve'emek Ha'ilah, again, they're camped in Emek Ha'ilah, Nilchamim in Plishtim, they're ready to fight with the Plishtim. They're obviously not fighting just yet, but they are ready to fight with the Plishtim. The Malbim points out that this is what the Yishai is telling his son. That this is still part of the message that Yishai is telling his son. He's saying that this is where you should go. You should go to Emek Ha'ilah, because that's where Shaul is with your brothers and with the rest of the army, and that's where they're going to start to fight. So this is the introduction. We're out of time for tonight, but this is the introduction of Goliath. Goliath is taunting and mocking B'nai Yisrael. And of course, we're introduced to David HaMelech, who we know, right? I keep saying David HaMelech, right now he's just David, but who we know is going to eventually defeat Goliath. Okay?